Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to Survival Mode Disrupted. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today I have Lillian here with us. So Lillian, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, first of all, Tisha, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I have been looking forward to this because this topic that we're about to dive in is so important and it's not talked about enough.
I agree.
Yeah. And a little about me. I actually came from the world of entertainment. I was in the world of producing. I've done movies. I've worked with celebrities. To name a few names, I work with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Tom Hanks, Bruce Willis, on movies like Cloud Atlas and Looper. And at one point in my life, I felt like I should be on the top. I mean, I was managing people, right? I was working in this fancy world. And then all of a sudden, everything crashed on me and then nothing made sense. And that's why I'm doing the work I'm doing right now. That was a pivotal transition in my life because for me, it was like, I went to film school. I'm surrounded by very successful people, but there was something inside me was always holding me back. And when I lost everything, I was about 34 years old. I lost my marriage. I lost a business, a startup. I was a single mom of a very young child. He was only 2-3 years old at the time. And I just couldn't understand what exactly happened. And mind you, I've been going to therapy for years. And that's when I completely lost myself. I mean, I think the scariest part was I lost myself of identity. That was the scariest thing because I feel like I wasn't my job. I wasn't a wife. I know I'm a mom. And I realized there was a lot of trauma that inside me that I didn't deal with. A lot of abuse that happened when I was a kid. So when I grew up, I was raised by a single mom with two kids. My dad was just never in my life. The last time I saw him, I was probably 6 years old. So no memories of him. My mom struggled. Even though I was born in America, my mom took us back to Taiwan where she was from because she was an immigrant here and she didn't know how to handle it. And even going back there, we lived in poverty. So there was a lot of things, you know, the struggle that she had, she was emotionally, physically unavailable. There was no government support in Taiwan, not that I knew of. And on top of that, it's a culture of silence. It's a culture of not talking. It's a culture of whatever the teacher or the superior says, that's who you are. I mean, this is back in the 90s. A lot has changed now. So a lot of things that happened to me when a lot of abuse that happened to me by the caretakers that was supposed to take care of me, I kept silent. And this is the biggest thing I've learned in my trauma. It was the act of violence that happened when I was a young kid, and it happened multiple times and multiple people, and I couldn't understand why. And that affected how I looked at myself in my life and how people could treat me, right? But the biggest thing was, the biggest trauma that I've learned was not having that safe space to talk to anyone about. That was the biggest trauma, because when I was asked, how come you didn't talk to anyone? I didn't feel safe. And yet, because I didn't feel safe, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, I was going through sexual abuse. I was so young. I didn't even know what sex was. How do you explain that to people? How do you explain that in an environment in the world where you're not supposed to say anything? Or in the world, when you say something, the teacher or someone that's older than you can say, you're lying, and then you just have to mute. Like, how do you express that? So what did I do? I did what most people did. I tried to forget about, I tried to pretend my whole life it didn't happen. I just pretended. I completely blocked it out. But the craziest thing is, the more I tried to block out, the more I live with it every single day, and I deal with it now. And that was my biggest fear, because my biggest fear when I was going through a divorce is I will not let my children go through what I went through. Right? When a child reacts, there's something deep inside. They're looking for attention. They're looking for love. I didn't know that. So I was always a black sheep in the family because I would run away. My mom was not there. So she'll put me at aunts and uncles' house. She'll pay for a nanny so I could stay there so she could figure out life, right? So I always run away, and I never told them why until I was an adult. Because all this trauma started to come in. And when I bring up this, I also want to bring up the culture. And I understand every culture is different. There could be a lot of similarities. But even for my culture, the Chinese Asian culture, there's not much love expressed within the family. So even as an adult now, I'm still in this healing process. And this, as an adult now, after going to therapy for years, I'm talking about at least once a week for, I don't know, 3 years straight, and sometimes twice a week, to finally be able to talk about it. Even in therapy, it took me over a year to tell my therapist what happened. That's how traumatic and how much I had to keep digging. And I couldn't even go into the details, right? But I will say, the last time when things happened, I really thought I was going to die. I thought it was by a stranger. I got strangled in like an empty space. This is what you see on TV. I was stripped naked, and I was about to jump out of the floor just to survive, just to escape. And I was only in seventh grade at the time. But by then, I knew what was going on. So, and I never spoke to anyone about it because I didn't know how. The only person I've ever spoke to was when I was escaping. There was a lady that found me, and I told her what happened. And that was it. And then I ran away, and it stayed silent. And I'm bringing this up because I know this is what I went through. And in my life is traumatic. And I know a lot of people have went through their versions, because now I've transitioned into personal development. I've transitioned to coaching. And just like you and I were talking about earlier, Leticia, before we hit the record button, sometimes you have to go through trauma. For me, I had to go through trauma to realize that it's so deep rooted. And I realized that if I don't deal with this, I can't be a stronger person. Oh, now I'm getting emotional. I can't be a stronger person for my kids. I can't be a stronger person for myself. What is the purpose that I have in my life? So the biggest change for me is making that a purpose. So I always call that turn my pain into art. Because for a long time, I was in the victim mindset. Even I don't speak about it, I was in such a victim mindset. I'm like, you guys don't even know what happened to me. This is when I was in my 20s, I would feel that way, or my teens, right? But now it's like, I got to turn that into purpose. So I got into coaching because I do love leadership. I do love business. That's what I thrive in. And the thing is, what I saw with a lot of, say, executives or even high-performing entrepreneurs, if they're not dealing with whatever inner trauma they have, I went through sexual abuse, but there's so many forms of abuse that could happen. But if we don't deal with it, what happens is it'll impact their performance, their work environment, the relationships, whether it's with your spouse, whether it's at work, because there's something deep rooted, and that's when the trigger happens, right? And sometimes when people are triggered, what happens is it takes us back to our childhood if we're not aware, if we don't deal with the emotional intelligence and how we communicate with other people. And that's why I've been so looking forward to be on this podcast, because these are the traumas that I feel like people should have a safe place to talk about. There's no judgment. There's just love. There's just unity. There's this community, right? For me, it's like, I don't care if you're men, if you're a woman, I don't care if the color of your skin. We all go through it. I've worked with people now. They're men. There's so many men. They get sexually abused as a kid, but it's almost like society feels like, oh, it happens more on women. I know a lot of gay people, a lot of my gay friends or gay colleagues in the past, they go through it. But just because they're gay, people don't take them that seriously, right? But it's like, what is that safe space? How can we talk about it so we can heal and make those adjustments on their own? Because one thing I've learned is we cannot change the world. We cannot do anything about it. The uncle that molested me, my mother knows, right? Even when I talk to her about it right now, I don't get, I'm so sorry. She will say, how come you didn't tell me? She'll be angry about that. But I know that's her form of love. In the past, I would feel very hurt. I'm like, how come you're not saying, I'm so sorry you went through this? But I just learned that I cannot control her, but I could control me. And that's the story that I tell. And by controlling me, I cannot change the past. I cannot change the other person's behavior. What is my priorities right now in my life? And for me, it's my kids. So when I turn all that anger, that hurt energy that I used to have, I changed the story of it and I made it into my life purpose. So my purpose right now is to help people. You know, every time I go through any obstacles in building my business or pursuing my purpose to help people, we all go through ups and downs. Adversity is always going to come. I always go back to my why, and everything I told you about, it can sound like a trauma, but that becomes my why. My purpose is I feel like, and I believe God had put me, God or the universe, whatever you believe in, but I believe in a higher power, put me through all that for me to do the work that I am doing. And that becomes my purpose. And something that's bigger than me is my kids. Like, I remember there was a defining moment, you know, when I lost everything, it happened so quickly. I was staying at my friend's place on her sofa couch. And I remember waking up one day and he was right next to me. He was only 3 years old. And he was like, Mom, you're going to be okay. Because I was sitting there crying, paralyzed, didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know who I was. I was completely depressed. And I was like, no, Mommy just fell. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to get back up. We're going to rise up. But that was also a moment I looked at him and I was like, I am not my mom. I am not going to let him go through what I went through. Right. So that became something that was bigger than me, like a legacy that I'm building. Instead of hiding my story, instead of pretending that never happened and staying silent in the back, which I've done for most of my life, I'm going to talk about it because I'm sure other people need to hear it so they could talk about it. And I don't want to hide behind my kids too. When they're older, they're still young. he's 10 years old. I want him to know, because I want him to know that, hey, it's okay. We have emotions. This is life. And it's how we deal with it. This is how are we going to rise back up? How are we going to take the control back? How can we make things better? Right. And for me, it's like, how do I break that generational gap? Because in my family, in my roots, saying love is very difficult. My grandma never said it to my mom. My mom never said it to me. When I say, I love you, Mom, now, even now as an adult, she's like, oh, you're so gay. But that's because she doesn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
It's just so uncomfortable for her.
Right.
So that's how I look at, like, hey, things happen to us in life. I get it. But let's do something for ourselves. Let's make ourselves better from this experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy because I've been going to therapy, like I said, for years. I worked on myself for years before I have arrived to this point where I know this is my why. I know this is who I am. I know this is why I'm here to do the work that I'm doing. And I also decided that I will do this until the day I die.
Mm-hmm. You have so much passion. Like from the moment we got on the call, it was just like, oh, I'm so excited to be here. And you brought up some really important points. And one of the things that I want to touch on is the culture, right? Culture tends to perpetuate how we deal with and manage our trauma. Like
Yes.
you spoke about the Asian culture, Chinese Asian culture. I can speak from a Caribbean-based Black culture.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to let my wig slip. It was always, you show the world how strong you are. No one sees you break. No one sees you crack, because the societal expectations for a Black woman are intense, and you don't show weakness. You do not show your humanity, really. And a lot of my suffering was done in silence simply because I felt awkward about admitting that I wasn't as strong as I was pretending to be. I felt awkward because although I knew my mom or my aunt would support me, I felt like I was letting them down by having these moments of weakness. Talk a little bit more about how your culture has impacted your ability to move on from your trauma, like what you're talking about, how you're dealing about it in your 20s.
You know, the first thing that helped me realize culture and how it packed me was there's this thing called the law of relativity. Everything just is, right? There's that one point in life before us human beings gave it a name, gave it a judgment. What is good? What is bad? What is beautiful? What is ugly? Right? Everything just is. And then it's the culture, the history that puts everything together. Now you create a certain perspective. That's why logic is different for everyone. And once I understood that, it was freeing for me. Because now I used to feel like there was this big shadow all over me. You got to do this. You got to do that. My teacher didn't like me because I didn't have great grades. I mean, I was a kid from America going to Taiwan and in a Chinese school where I could barely read and write. Like I was thrown in that environment, and they go to school since elementary, it's from 7 to like 6 p.m. It's very long, very different from the West. I was told that my best job should be a janitor, being put down by the teacher. And when you're in that kind of environment with at that young, the expectation is extremely high. Talk about the impact of culture. It was really, it's always, I'm not good enough. How do I speak out when I'm being put down? Right? That was the biggest thing. But as an adult now, when I look back, I just see a bunch of people that are hurt and they don't know how to express themselves. Therefore, they express it through pain. Looking back now, that was my fifth grade teacher. I feel sorry for him. I mean, why would you put down a kid in front of the whole class? And back then, the class had 50 students, right? So, but I'm not mad, because I understand there's probably some pain that he's going through, like my mother. My mother has a lot of pain she's going through from her childhood. She talks about today. And that's why we're so blessed to be, for me, I'm always so grateful that we're alive in this world, because we do have information. We do have the tools to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, but gone.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I think particularly the older generations, they didn't have access to information the way that we do. And if they are really embedded in their culture, your mom grew up in an environment where silence was king. You know what I mean? So she suffered in silence. She chose to run away, you know, in based on what you said, instead of dealing with things. But that was perpetuated by the culture. And then another thing that you mentioned was the lack of safe space, right? There wasn't safe space to speak up, to express what was going on. And while I think, you know, the changes that we've seen and how things are much different now in this day and age where more people are speaking up, we aren't necessarily in the most considerate environments, right? So people speak up and then they are met with this commentary that is quite negative. And like I've talked about this before, one of the main reasons why I do what I do now was I was highly triggered during the Diddy news. The way the news, the social media had so much to say about Cassie, as opposed to this man that was, we have later found out, doing a whole lot of nonsense, right? But the way society as a whole treated Cassie was highly triggering for me. It's people suffer and they suffer in silence for a very long time. And to have the confidence to then stand up and advocate for themselves and to be met with such negativity, I don't think that people understand how dangerous that actually is for the people who are dealing with trauma. And I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not putting the responsibility on someone else to make trauma survivors feel better. But we are a society that only seems to react when it affects us, like intimately. And I think it's very sad because I think if more people had safe spaces, we would have bigger conversations around trauma. We would have bigger conversations around healing, which would then give space for more healing and a conscious movement into focusing on moving out of what keeps us stuck. What's your thoughts?
I think there's two layers. There is exactly what you said. People will be silent for a while because a lot is going on inside. It's almost like you want to organize and prepare yourself before you speak out. And then the second layer is we do live in an era where everything is very loud because of the platforms. And the thing is, there are still a lot of people that are ignorant out there. And I don't blame them because I was on the other side at one point. But for me, and I don't wish this on anyone, for me, it took me to hit my rock bottom to really look at myself, to really dig deep. And if I, excuse my language, but to really look at my shit because I used to blame everyone but me. But the moment I start to look at me, that's when the healing started to come. So it's this place where recognizing, taking the control back, people, they're going to talk what they want to talk. The thing with social media is it has become loud, and in a way, it's one of those things where it is what it is, right? You see, I don't know if you follow the politics in America, but it's changed so much in the last 10 years. It's so divided. It's so extreme because of now the loudness, right? But I think, but what you're doing is amazing because like we still need to have a space for people to talk. And you know, when I look at the Asian culture, even up until today, okay, mental health is still not looked at seriously. They don't believe in it. My ex-husband was Korean. Their family does not believe in it because it's not something that you can see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. It's everything is internal. So that stigma, unfortunately, still exists in most Asia. I can't say all Asia, but I would say it's still a big majority of it. Not Asian Americans, not Asian in the West, but Asia to work on. To understand like what is going on internally, what is going on with all the traumas, and then how do you deal with it? And to your point, how do we create a safe community within ourselves? Because I always look at my life. I never got support from my mother, right? But when I'm talking about support, I'm not talking about financial support. I'm just talking about emotional, like, hey, you could do it. Just get back up. You got to keep going. Like stuff, like just these encouraging words, this kind of loving support that would carry a human being so far than just like giving someone money and helping. Like it's a different way of helping, right? It's a different way of supporting and loving and healing. If you
The emotional support is so important. Healing in itself is such a journey. And I loved what you said. Your healing was amplified basically when you took ownership of your shit. Like one of the things that I've talked about on this podcast is, you know, to truly exit survival mode, you have to take radical ownership of your life and your decisions and your past. You have to take ownership of it. And oftentimes, you know, that blame game plays such a significant role that we don't realize that we are absolutely giving away our power by not taking ownership. And yeah, it may be some shame associated with that ownership, but again, it's something that needs to be worked through in order for us to move forward. And then one other thing that you said is that I found interesting was, I believe there are three phases to accident survival mode. I think there is awareness. I think next is reprogramming. And then lastly is reinvention. And you spoke about having to reprogram what you knew through culture, through the way that you were raised, in order for you to get the healing that you needed, in order for you to move beyond your trauma. I think that's so important to recognize. The person who comes out of survival mode cannot be the same person that was operating heavily in trauma. You have to change the story that you're telling yourself. You have to change your mindset in order for you to move forward. And it is hard. Let's keep it real. It's not easy, because oftentimes we are rewriting decades of stories.
Yeah.
But in that process, that's where our freedom comes, because we have control. We have radical control of ourselves and our futures. And a lot of it depends on the stories that we're telling ourselves.
Yes. Yes. And my biggest thing is like, find meaning in all this. Like one powerful question I ask myself all the time is, why am I going through this? You know, what am I supposed to learn from this situation? Like everything always works out. And that's a belief that I just put in my head, because I'm still here. I'm alive. Despite losing everything so quickly, I was able to rebuild it up. So I said, so that's where I, now my belief is like, everything is always going to work out. Am I, if we were doing this when I was 18 years old or 20 years old, my biggest fear was to be homeless. Because of how unsteady my childhood was, moving everywhere. I was never at a place for long enough. For a few months, I went to so many different schools. And that was my biggest fear back then. But now it's like, everything is going to work out. But what am I supposed to do? And what am I supposed to learn at this very moment? What is my calling? What is my why? And what can I do right now to make a difference? Because I'm put on this planet for a reason. And I feel like when we could take that frame of mind, that power back in your own story, now you become the hero. Now you're the main character. We're the writer, the character, director, the producer. It is my life. I could write someone out. If someone that is not treating me with respect in my life, I could write that person out. That person does not need to be cast in my movie. I didn't know that in the past. When I was coming from a place of desperation, of survival, when I wanted love desperately, that's how I walked into a marriage that was not in harmony with me. So trauma, I didn't treat my childhood trauma. What happened was I carried into my marriage. And because I was in therapy, I realized I was in a domestic violence relationship. And my ex-husband had that generational trauma from his parents. See the generation. So it's like, so that's why I'm so big on dealing with it right now, because it had I dealt with it, I would have never allowed myself to be treated the way I was treated. But I always say, now I got a story to tell. I came out stronger. I made it out. Things change. I have better relationship, right? Yes, it is not easy looking at yourself. Like the way I would say in my language is you got to look at your shit, because I know people, why people don't want to, because it stinks. And trust me, it stinks. It takes time to clean up. Mm-hmm. But when it's cleaned up, when you understand what is going on, it's so much easier to organize, to understand yourself, to understand these feelings and emotions. And instead of trying to shut it down, saying, no, I'm not supposed to feel that way, it's like, oh, I'm feeling this way because of X. So I always say, you know, I took a lot of time to learn my inner child. But once I've understood my inner child, there's that one point, it was like, I got to start growing up. I can't be living in the past. So while I still live with my inner child at the time, I'm really working on growing into this woman. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest difference, the life transformation that I went through. And you know, talk about reinventing yourself, because now it's like, we know how it works in life. I love the saying, you know, when you know the truth about magic, that's when the magic ends. But when you know the truth about life, that's when the magic begins. And to know the truth about life, you got to understand you first.
Absolutely.
That's very powerful. Yeah.
And I love that quote that you just, what you just said. So tell us, Lillian, how can we connect with you and how do you work with clients?
Yeah. So I have my social media handles, Miss Lillian Victoria. So I'm on YouTube, I'm on TikTok, I'm on Instagram. So I love to connect with everyone. And how do I work with clients? I would say book a call with me. I work with clients from a company's point of view. I do cohorts. I do retreats, and I also do one-on-one. So it really depends. And most importantly, because, you know, I'm sure you explained this, every client I work with, it's a relationship, and I'm very loyal to that. That's just a part of my DNA. I did not change. So it's always good to meet people, and I love it, because like you just create this amazing community. And I like to call it a community of empowerment, because we're all empowered together and we rise together.
Yes. So I'll put all that information in the show notes. But before we wrap up, Lillian, what is one key takeaway that you want the audience to action?
Don't be afraid to look inside and look deep. Any of the judgments or shame that comes in, you know, invite it to leave. And the way I do it is I acknowledge it, I give it a name, and I said, I got to do some work right now. Don't be in my way. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, you take the control back, because a lot of these shame will stem from the fear of what other people think. And we don't need to go there, right? Focus on you, transform, heal, and rise even higher.
Yes, here's to rising. Lily and I really enjoyed this conversation. And listeners, thank you again for tuning in and catching Survival Mode Disrupted. I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, and you damn sure were not built just to survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.